Dispatch, pockets of fire all around.
Dear Chief, much has happened since we last spoke. Welcome to Dear Chief Podcast, where your hosts and their guests share the 411 of being married to the people who respond to 911s. Take a peek into fire family life and get unabashed advice on how to prevent forest fires in your marriage. Now, here's your hosts, two seasoned fire wives, Audra and Chelsea.
All right, we're back with another pod. Get used to it because we are booked until May and we've got some pretty fun guests to help us navigate this first responder family life. And we're bringing in a new expert on fire family life today with fellow firewife, Caitlin Soleil. Welcome, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. I love your guys' podcast and love what you're doing in the world.
Caitlin Soleil is a licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health expert in California who specializes in women and teen mental health, modern parenthood, and anxiety disorders. Beyond her work as a therapist, Caitlin is a mom to three, a wife to a firefighter, and the author of the newly released book, A Little Less of a Hot Mess. Caitlin brings a fresh and modern voice to the world of psychology and has been published and featured in various media outlets, including The Washington Post, New York Post, Scary Mommy, Psych Central, Romper, Oxygen, ABC, Fox, NBC, and more. By leading conversations about mental health, Caitlin helps modern women, parents, and families develop more agency and move towards a life that lines up with their values instead of their fears.
Okay, so Caitlin, tell us a little bit about yourself, life as a fire wife. Start from the very beginning.
It's always funny to hear your bio. It's like a little bit like, I'm not going to look at the screen while you guys say that. Anyways, nice to be on. It's so good to be here with you guys. A little bit about me. Where do I start? Yeah, so just like you, I am a partner to a firefighter. It has been a journey for me. I actually am also the daughter of a firefighter and the daughter-in-law of a firefighter. So we have a lot of members in the fire service in our family. My brother is a police officer. So I very much feel like I've been embedded in the culture of first responders since the day I was born. So my husband works for the San Francisco Fire Department. Before that, he was Marin County Fire and really, really loved his career there and was there for, he got in at like age 21, so it must have been 12 years and got a letter from the San Francisco Fire Department. He had applied at like 21 that they were accepting him years and years later. So it was a really hard career decision. Meanwhile, I'm 8 months pregnant with our first and he decides to leave Marin County Fire, which we both had become, I mean, him even more than me, but like just really, as you know, part of the fire family there to go to San Francisco, which was ultimately a really great career move and really different than Marin County. And yet I feel like no matter where you land in that kind of fire family world, you're met with some of the same challenges and some of the same, support. So that's been wonderful to see and experience.
So good support.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have to be really honest here. I think in the smaller fire departments, and I don't know how small Marin County Fire is, but I did feel more of a sense of at least people felt a little more local. And you did feel a little bit more kind of like enveloped in that community. San Francisco Fire is a big fire department, right? And so you kind of have to find your people. And, you know, so that's been a little bit more challenging, but I have found a few kind of close friends within that, including my sister-in-law, who is also married to a firefighter. So I think it depends kind of how much you're willing to put in. These days, I'm really trying to make more of an effort because, as you guys know, with work and life and kids, you can kind of lose sight of the fact that you do need your community. You do need your people who understand what it's like to be in a first responder family.
Yeah, definitely. And so was your husband a firefighter when you met him, did you say?
Yes, he was a firefighter when I met him and had been a firefighter a seasonal firefighter since he was 18 or 19 years old. He was the guy who always knew that's what he wanted to do. And kind of all of his efforts were pointed in that direction.
So when you first started dating, you were pretty much embedded into the schedule
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because before dating him, I mean, I was 27 when I met him. I was raised in a firefighter family. That's really all I knew, kind of as far as like parents' work schedules. My mom's a teacher. We figured it out. Firehouse nights were always kind of like a little bit like, let's just see how this goes. Maybe we'll have breakfast for dinner, right? Just like how it is for me now as a mom. But I didn't date any firefighters, really kind of like not lost touch with that, but like really wasn't in my 20s around a lot of people in that community. So it was interesting to find myself dating a firefighter and being like, oh yeah, I remember this. I remember this feeling of like, now you're gone for a couple of days. Maybe you're gone for a couple of weeks. Like, I don't know. We'll see. So yeah, it was still kind of an adjustment for me.
Yeah. So even growing up with a dad as a firefighter, you were still kind of like, oh, okay, this is different when I'm married or I'm dating it.
Yeah.
Subsequently marrying it. Yeah. All right. And you guys have two kids?
We have three kids. Yeah. We have a 9-year-old, 8-year-old, and a newly 6-year-old.
Aw, so you are in the thick of it still.
Yes, we really are. We are in that. The good part is they're all at one school now. That is like, that feels like a big hallelujah, like one drop off, one pickup. It's amazing.
So what made you kind of steer towards mental health?
So actually, when I met my husband, Tony, truly at that time I was working in media and journalism, and this sounds cheesy, but it's just true. I don't know how else to describe it. I loved how much he loved his work in the world. Like I knew that his job was hard. I knew that there were challenges that come with it, but he was genuinely excited to go to work, to be a part of that community. I knew right away that he got a big sense of meaning out of the work he did in the world. And I was at a point at 27 in my career where I'd started off thinking I was going to be this big journalist and do all these things. And I ended up finding myself working on kind of like reality TV shows and didn't feel a lot of purpose in the work that I was doing. And then after that, felt kind of lost trying to make it in San Francisco in advertising. And I just felt really like, gosh, I would love to do something that gave me that a similar sense of purpose and meaning. And then, you know, got me thinking about what I'm naturally kind of inclined to do and what I'm good at. I'd always been that person that people would kind of go to for like advice or like to kind of lend a listening ear. And so I thought about therapy and what I could bring to that space, and ultimately decided to go back to grad school, which at the time I remember thinking, after like a year of knowing him, I was hoping we would get engaged and get married, which I know sounds a little cuckoo, but that's, you know, when you kind of meet the right one, you kind of know. And I was like, this sounds crazy to go back to grad school. I'm 27. I'm so old. Now I'm 40. And I'm like, you were such an idiot. You were not old. Good thing you did that. And I think that's really what ultimately made me wake up to the truth that I wanted to be in the field of mental health, was to experience that sense of purpose and meaning. And then also I will say too, I've always been really connected to the idea of hearing people's story and understanding their story, which is, I think, kind of what drew me to journalism. And then eventually being a therapist. And then the last thing I'll say is that I think being aware of the mental health challenges that come with, you know, it's not all, you know, wonderful being a first responder, as you guys know and talk about, and it can be really challenging. I've had some personal family members struggle with mental health. I've seen it in my husband's friend and community. And so I was hoping that maybe I could understand the culture and then also help other first responders in the work that I do in their families.
So do you specialize in first responder families?
So I think like it's interesting because I started off like really wanting to just be like niche down or narrow in on first responder families. And what I've found is I tend to, yes, like get a lot of those clients just because, whether it's referral, word of mouth, but I tend to work with a lot of firefighter and police officer wives. And so I think through that, I've become much more interested in that. Not because I don't think you can't support the first responder themselves. I think that's really, really important. But I find that in whether or not they access those resources is another conversation, but they do have resources. And we can get into a whole thing about that. I'm actually doing some work right now with a new app that I can't share too much about that is actually aiming to help first responders and their families with their mental health. But I really love working with women and helping them kind of understand how to really truly care for themselves in the midst of being in a partnership with the first responder when it can feel challenging.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about anxiety and uncertainty that comes with being married to a firefighter. So And it's not just with the calls that they run either. It's the scheduling. It's right now the hot topic is the overtime, all of that. If you can kind of touch on that.
Yeah, it's really challenging. I think it's really people who aren't married to or in partnership with a first responder can't really understand what this feels like. Maybe the closest thing would be kind of having a military spouse, and not to compare the two things, but I think it would be like the closest thing, right? What's really challenging, I think what brings up a lot of anxiety for women and for me truly sometimes is the uncertainty of not knowing if you brought up overtime. This is just one example. If they're supposed to get off at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, are they actually going to get off? Are they going to get mandatoried? And that has been a fairly new challenge for us over the last few years. I know for wives and partners who their partner works in like CAL FIRE or does a lot of like stuff in wildland fires, it's a whole nother thing, right? But for me, the mandatories have been really hard, especially trying to have a job, right? Like not trying, actually having a job. And having my own clients who are relying on me being there for a 9:30 a.m. appointment. Oh, and now a kid gets sick. Now I've got to stay home for the kid. So it's like, to me, that's been a really personally a hard thing. But also I work with a couple clients right now whose husbands are police officers and they're dealing with the same kind of thing, right? So it's the uncertainty in scheduling alone can cause a lot of anxiety. And then a whole other element would be the anxiety that comes with knowing that early on in motherhood, that this was a big one for me, like when I first had the babies, knowing that they had to go back to work pretty soon, because at the time my husband didn't have leave because he was on probation. And I think just the anxiety of being alone with your baby for 24 or 48 hours or even more sometimes before you're ready for that. I just named two kind of main trigger points, but I think there's a lot of others as well.
Can't control all those outside forces. So how do you manage within that space, your own regulatory system around the anxiety?
Yeah, great question. There's lots of different ways that we can practice doing that. And I think that's where things like therapy or, you know, therapy is definitely not the only way. And I'll talk about what we can work on, what we work on in therapy to help kind of control what we can control, so to speak, right? And then what outside of therapy can help as well. But just first, recognizing that there are many things out of your control in general is a really good place to start. I think recognizing is step one, accepting is step two. That's the hardest part, right? Is especially for a lot of us women, we're high functioning, right? We get a lot of shit done. We can do a lot of things. We can handle a lot. And so to feel out of control in this realm of our life where we're not sure what's going to happen with our husband's schedule or our schedule can feel really daunting. So just working towards accepting that piece of it. And one thing, and this isn't meant to be like a, well, at least it's not this, or what's the word I'm trying to say? It's like, we're not trying to like Pollyanna our way out of this by being like, well, they get lots of time off when they want it. Or, you know, when they're home, they're fully home. I hear a lot of these like things that even I tell myself to try and make myself feel better. Those things are true, but they don't negate or take away from the hard stuff, right? So I think we kind of get into trouble psychologically when we try and dismiss our feelings or make ourselves feel better by trying to say like, it's not as bad as, all right, or you're being overly dramatic. So the first step is really accepting the way you feel. It's valid that you feel the way you feel. So that's the kind of thing we would work on in therapy. We don't have to sugarcoat these feelings. They're allowed to be there. And then the second piece would be really trying to take control of what you can control, which is kind of limited, but it's like, how am I going to care for myself within this, right? What is one thing that I can do to kind of maintain my own self-care routine-ish? I would say ish because like, you know, every day is a little bit different. But so holding on to the parts of your own self that you do have control over. I think those are kind of the two first kind of most important elements of caring for your mental health. We can get more into actual like tools for regulating anxiety and things like that. But I think those first two steps are not to be missed.
Oh yeah, for sure. You definitely have to acknowledge the fact that there are outside forces making decisions for you. And then mm-hmm. on top of that, you have to accept the fact that they're doing that and then cope with the circumstances that you're in. So I think that takes time. Mm-hmm. As the spouse or partner of a first responder to learn. I think Audra and I are still 15, 16 years later, sometimes managing those same reactions,
mm-hmm.
even though we've been doing it for as long as we have, we still have those same feelings when they call us on the phone and they're like, hey, so not coming home today because so-and-so called in sick, or mm-hmm. I'm forced on duty for the next 30 days because we're shorthanded. There's still the same amount of anxiety around that as there was day one. But we've just learned over time how to deal with it.
Right. And maybe not to say or react like with the first thought, right? Because like, again, we don't have to be perfect. Like, but I think what I've learned to do is like, and is like, there's a difference between like not letting yourself feel your feelings and then like exploding, right? Mm-hmm. All your feelings out onto the person who really, like, the truth is your first responder doesn't have control over a lot of this either. Right. So I think it's like, having the thought, having the feeling, allowing it to be there. And then it's like being able to consciously choose, like, what's my next step? And I think that's kind of the key.
For sure. I think it's really interesting when I finally made that shift from exploding, because let's be honest, we all did it.
Huh.
And sometimes we still do,
yeah.
Because we're not perfect by any means. But when I kind of stopped doing that and I started just being like, okay, cool. I'll see you when I see you, you know, kind of thing. My firefighter in particularly became very insecure about that, because he's like, wait, do you just not care that I'm not coming home, or what is happening right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's not really solving the problem if I'm sitting here screaming at you because you're not coming home today. Like, that's just making it worse. So I've made a choice to just be okay with it, you know?
That's a big shift. I think we make, I made that shift myself too, for the most part. Like, again, yeah, not every day is like that, but I did know, I do notice that as well, where it's like, oh wow, you used to really get upset about this, whether my husband verbalizes it or not, you can sense that it's there. I'm like, okay, are you, like, almost like they're like, are you sure you're cool with that? Like, and you're like, yeah, you've been, you know, asking me all these years to understand that this is your job and that you have no control over it. And now that I'm understanding this, it feels like maybe it's messing with kind of the homeostasis a little bit, right? Yeah. Take some time to adjust.
Yeah. I mean, and then you never really truly adjust. You just accept your fate, right?
Yeah.
every day is new, and it's newly normal every single day, right? That's kind of how I feel about it. I don't even know how to ask this question. So with the anxiety, we've done the acceptance, we've done the, you know, recognition. Now in that space, when we are feeling those feelings and, you know, kind of acknowledging that they're there, what happens when it's really serious, like when it gets to be out of control and we can't regulate ourselves? What would the best practices at home?
Yeah, I love this question. And I'm going to throw it back here, which is in a very therapist way. And I'm going to say, like, can you give me an example of that? And I know that, and it doesn't have to be your own personal example, but it helps if I can have like a tangible example of what really out of control, quote unquote, looks like, maybe for you or somebody that you've known that has experienced this. And then I can give you the answer of like what I would suggest to help regulate. Are we talking like panic attack symptoms? Are we talking like anger, like maybe all those things?
Yeah, let's talk about panic attacks. I used to have them all the time.
Yeah, I've had panic attacks too, namely during COVID, the beginning of COVID. So, I mean, I guess usually with a panic attack or feelings of panic are really common with anxiety, obviously, and it usually starts with some kind of trigger. So let's just say like the trigger is, I mean, are we talking like your husband calls, they have to work overtime again, you have 5 million things to do that day, and you just feel really out of control. That might be one scenario.
Yeah.
Or there might be another scenario where people, I hear this a lot from firefighter partners, where they're like, I'm actually just worried about my partner when they're at work. Maybe they're away at a, you know, wildland fire, or there just is a lot going on. I know for police officer wives, this is also a big issue as well. I shouldn't say wives, spouses across the board. So I think like the first thing to do is just like we would teach any client coming in with panic attack symptoms to regulate would be to start with acknowledging what's happening is actually a panic attack. And that's really the hardest step, because so often we think like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with me. Either like I'm having a heart attack, or, you know, I'm going crazy. Those are all really common thoughts that people have when they experience the physical sensation of panic. So the first thing we want to do is recognize that it's a panic attack And I say this, remind yourself that panic attacks by definition can't last forever. Mostly they only last for a few minutes. They peak after a couple of minutes and then start to go down. So I think just even having that knowledge of this can't and won't last forever is a really good place to start. And then if you can access your breath, I know a lot of times it's like, I'm so panicky. I'm not going to sit here and meditate, right? That's not what we're going. But our brain's like, do you want to meditate? You're like in fight or flight mode right now. This won't happen. But we can take a couple deep, slow breaths in through our nose and out through our mouth. There's proper ways to do this. So starting with acknowledgement, breath, and then just letting it rise and fall. With panic, you just have to let it pass. There's really no way to trick yourself out of a panic attack other than just sitting through it and breathing through it. The last thing I'll say about panic attacks in particular is, you know, if you start to have more of them, one thing we try and do is put ourselves in a situation where it's like, if I do this, then I won't have a panic attack, right? We start to get kind of like, we try and avoid the things that could trigger it. That avoidance actually ends up feeding our anxiety and ends up making it worse. So we've got to actually do the things, put ourselves in the situations that might make us feel anxious so that we can actually send that message to our brain. I can handle this. I can deal with this. This feels really bad, but I can get through it. This is a practice that we have to keep coming back to.
What do you tell the wives or the spouses, excuse me, that are knee deep in the trenches? I mean, I know Chelsea and I've talked about this a lot. When the kids were really little and you're dealing with all of these constant schedule shifts and this overtime, how do you get those newer spouses with the kids at home and the chaos to really focus on not themselves necessarily, but just to decompress a little bit within the chaos? That was the hardest part for me, was trying to even just absorb anything that was happening because it was so chaotic. I always felt like there was no time for me and I was just going to explode any second, I think. What do you say to those newer spouses?
It's so hard. I think it's just so hard. I lived it. I know the feeling in my bones. Like, I remember how it felt. I know how it feels now, which is still hard, but significantly better. When your kids are really young and you have infants and toddlers or whatever, it's just really, really challenging. So my key thing is do whatever you need to do to get through it. That, you know, obviously reaching out for support. I know not all of us have family nearby or close friends nearby, but if we can build some kind of like even mini community around us, I think we've gotten so, and I'm guilty of this, so kind of like self-reliant and independent that we don't actually ask for help from our girlfriends or from our, you know, family members when we don't feel like we absolutely have to. And in other cultures and communities, this is just common practice, right? So I think we can start by like being brave and saying like, hey, I'm really losing my shit today. Like, do you think you could come over and we could have coffee while the kids run around or have a glass of wine, or can we meet at a park, or can you grab the kids for an hour? Okay. So like, that's one thing. I don't want to spend too long on that, because I always got annoyed when people were like, it's a village. And you're like, well, where's my village, right? Like, not everybody has that around them. So if you can try and create that or facilitate that, that's wonderful. And then the other thing would be to just know that you taking a couple of minutes to yourself, whether it's in the bathroom, which I hate that idea, or like, I don't know, in a closet somewhere, it's like your kids are going to be okay and you're going to live, right? Like, put them in front of the TV a little extra longer. Like, this is me as a therapist saying this, like, your mental health, your okayness, right, is so much more important than a little extra screen time for your kids. Just like, do what you got to do.
Can you say that again, please? So everybody can hear. I heard that the first time.
Your mental health, your okayness, right, is much more important than a little extra screen time.
Yes. Yes.
And I think there's a lot of pressure around like meals for your kids. You know, people think that they need to make these gourmet, organic, sugar-free, preservative-free meals for their kids. There's a lot of pressure coming in from social media to be this perfect homemaker all the time, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of chicken nuggets in the microwave, yes. Guys. Like frozen chicken nuggets and some french fries. Like,
do what I think feels good or easy-ish to you, and let that be done, right? So whether it's cereal for dinner once or twice a week or five nights a week, I don't care, right? But it's like your kids are fed. You know, one thing, fed kids, right? It's better than not fed kids. And at the end of the day, like, it's kind of fun for them. I always remember, I mean, I said it earlier on the podcast, one of my favorite memories is firehouse nights. My mom is a really good cook and loves to cook. I am not that person. But on the nights my dad was at the firehouse, we would do breakfast for dinner nights. And I loved that. And so now I started doing that with my kids every once in a while. And they love it. And honestly, I'm just going to say this. Dinners, when my partner is gone, if he's listening to this, he's going to hear it, actually go smoother because I'm not trying to feed them. He's a really good cook and he's trying to like get in like the meat and the vegetable and like have them try new things. Great, really important. But they usually throw a fit over it. When I cook and he's at the firehouse, I just feed them what I know they'll eat and we get through it. It's kind of just like an anecdote there, but
I heard somebody say once done is better than perfect.
Yes.
And I know that, like I said, there's a lot of pressure around that. And I just feel like it's not pressure you need to have.
Nor your, they don't need to see you stressing over that. They don't need to internalize the message that their meal has to be perfect. You know, someday they might be parents and someday they're going to look back and be like, yeah, I loved that, you know, mom was flexible and, you know, we had some fun even maybe on firehouse nights. It wasn't just like mom yelling, trying to get me to eat the chicken or whatever it is. Yeah.
I'm guilty of ice cream for dinner. So
yeah, but again, you've got to do what works for you. Done is better than perfect. I love that. Yeah.
But let's talk about also too, when they're home, when the firefighter or the first responder is home too, it also doesn't have to be a perfect meal either. There are plenty of times when I have felt guilty for not making this elaborate dinner when they're home because they're home and I have to be this magical human being. It's like, no, I'm going to be still maybe feeding the kids chicken nuggets today because I didn't plan dinner and you're making a sandwich. Sorry, dude. Like,
yes.
And I,
conversely, like I just recently had this conversation with my firefighter. I don't know why we got into this routine. When he comes home for 3 days, he's not doing any of the cooking. And I finally was like, after a few weeks of that, I was like, wait. I don't need to be cooking 7 days a week. So you need to take a turn when you're home. Like, yes. I get that you're tired or whatever from working, but you're a parent too. So I don't care what you cook, but I'm taking the night off for one night
a week.
Yes. We're tired from cooking all the days too. So I think like that is one thing where I think I didn't mention this earlier on, or maybe it's not even in my bio, but I got trained in something called fair play, which it's, I think you guys are familiar with it, this idea of helping each other better share the load of parenthood. And I think there's a really big need for that in the first responder family. And I think, yet at the same time, fair play, people can be afraid to apply some of those, you know, notions to it because they're like, oh, my life is different. My husband's got working shifts, but there's a way to do it. That's not perfect, right? But there's a way to do it that fits, like you're saying, can you, you know, I need you to take a night or two, or, hey, let's feed the kids some kind of easy meal and let's you and I get takeout. And so we have some time with each other, whatever it is. I think letting go of expectation is the headline here and just doing what works for your unique family.
Yeah, I love that. That's so true. It's just your idea of perfection is going to be completely different than your neighbor, than anybody at the firehouse, anybody at the police station. Everybody's idea of perfection looks different and it changes every day. You have to be super comfortable with that, especially in this line of work, because nothing is ever the same.
No, sure isn't.
Tell us a little bit about your book. I want to hear about A Little Less of a Hot Mess, because I feel like that could be the title of mine and Chelsea's memoir.
It's not a memoir, but I do in A Little Less of a Hot Mess. I wrote it during the pandemic and I swear it was like my life raft because it was an excuse to go to my office at least once a week and just sit there and write by myself without the kids and without my husband and just be. But really, I wrote it as a tool for mom's mental health in general. But of course, because of who I am and because of the fact that I am married to a firefighter, I think a lot of it applies to us as firefighter spouses. So it's basically these invitations into what I think is real self-care, not like, oh, go get a massage kind of self-care, but actually real self-care. Things like, how do I even start with recognizing that I have permission to grow and evolve, that I have permission to take time for myself, to be more than a mom or a partner, and then moving into to really tactical things like we talked about, how do I deal with uncertainty and anxiety? How do I cope with change as it comes? Setting boundaries with friends and family members, kind of all the key tenets of mental health I tried to put in one book, but with my own story of how I'm working through each one of those things. Because I wanted it to feel relatable, not just like I'm this expert here telling you what to do, because I might be a therapist with these degrees, but I am in no means an expert in life, and I struggle too. So I think that's what makes this a little different than a lot of self-help books out there, personal development books, is it's real, it's honest. And I want it to be a guide for people like me who struggle from time to time. Now that it's out there in the world, I keep thinking, I really wish I just didn't only say the Modern Mom's Guide to Growth and Evolution, because I really think it's for more than moms. I think it's just for humans or for women in general. So yeah, that's my little piece of work. And my lifeline through the pandemic was having somewhere to go and something to do besides be a mom and a school teacher.
We love that. We'll have to check out the book. Any last thoughts before we put you on the hot seat?
No, I think I covered it, but you can put me on the hot seat.
Awesome. Okay, I get to be the host of the hot seat today. For those of you who are listening that don't know what that is, it's just a series of questions that we ask our guests to get to know them better. First responses that come to mind, just fun.
Okay.
Two adjectives that you would use to describe yourself.
Oh, gosh, this is hard. Okay, goofy and deep, like serious at the same time.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I think it's a good answer. Okay, so if you were to host a dinner party and could invite three people, living or deceased, who would you invite and why?
Oh my gosh. I would invite Oprah because I love her and just think she's like the most amazing human on the earth. I would invite my grandma O'Donnell because I think she's deceased. Her and Oprah would have the most hilarious, kind of inappropriate conversations. My grandma is a spitfire. And who's the third? Gosh, I think I would bring my dad to the table because I think like having, it's just a funny mix of people. Yeah, my dad, Oprah, and my grandma.
And what is something you would tell your 15-year-old self?
I would tell my 15-year-old self that most of the things that you think are really important right now and that matter, including, you know, weight and how you look and whether or not you fit in, are going to matter for a little while and you just have to get through it. But at the end of the day, they aren't the most important things in the world and you will find yourself. I think it's like you will find yourself, you will find where you belong, and it won't always feel this way forever. That was like seven things, not one thing, but
yeah, that's okay. 15-year-olds really struggle with that.
Yes, teenagers is a whole nother level of.
Okay, so next question, what's your favorite place to eat in the Bay Area?
You know what? This is something that's hard for me because I'm not like a big foodie person. I do like to eat though. So if I were to go out for a nice dinner in San Francisco, okay, I will say this. My husband and I like the North Beach restaurant. That's kind of our spot.
Yum.
We like to go like once a year.
I love the North Beach.
Okay, last question. Other than your own book, because we're already recommending that, are there any books or movies you would recommend to our listeners?
I love reading. It's a big part of my life these days. Okay, so I have two recs. One would be more of like a mental health psychology book for parenting, would be actually Dr. Becky's book, Good Inside. It's a wonderful book. And I think it's like parenting and reparenting. So it's not only helping you with your parenting, but it's also helping you kind of heal some of those maybe childhood wounds that you may have, but we all have. And then for a really fun kind of, I don't know about you, but because I do a lot of heavy work, emotionally heavy work, I like to be distracted in my reading and kind of feel something else. There's a new book I just read. Is it Abby Jimenez? And she wrote a book called Yours Truly. And it is so cute and so good. It's a romance novel, which isn't usually my genre, but it has a little bit of a mental health element because the main character, they're ER doctors and one of them has social anxiety. So I find it to be a really great book.
Caitlin, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. One question we do get a lot of is, are you accepting new patients?
I am. And I just grew, our team expanded. So my therapy practice is called Bay Area Modern Therapy. And we have four clinicians on our team and we see clients virtually across the state of California, as well as in person here in the North Bay Area. We definitely would, you can head to our website, which is bayareamoderntherapy.com to find out more.
And that's your Instagram too, right?
My Instagram is at caitlin.sule. So my Instagram is more of my kind of my author page. I do have a Bay Area Modern Therapy Instagram page, but I just don't post on it as much.
Okay.
But here's the deal. You can find all the info about all that on my Instagram handle, which is at caitlin.soule, or my website, Bay Area Modern Therapy.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen. The ratings and review help us reach new listeners and find awesome guests.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Find us on social media at Dear Chiefs Podcast and online at DearChiefs.com. Tune in weekly for the 25,000 foot view of loving a first responder. Audra and Chelsea, over and out.